Good morning, it's 9:30. You're tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, in the live reading of the Green Valley News for the, the 7th day of July, 2025. Mark DeGroft with you, thank you for tuning in. Just a quick look at weather. It's going to be very, very hot today. An extreme health warning is in effect by the National Weather Service. Looking for a high today of around 106 or 7, and a low tonight around 78 degrees. Very hot, so if you have to do anything outside, get it done by 10 o'clock today, or wait until this evening. And if you're outside, obviously drink lots of water and seek shade. Okay, for Monday, let's go ahead and take a look at what's happening. The first taste of monsoon has brought some heavy rains near Green Valley. The National Weather Service in Tucson has calls Wednesday's rain in the first of the monsoon, with areas south of Green Valley seeing the heaviest precipitation. National Weather Service meteorologist Chris Rasmussen said the Green Valley received about a half inch of rain, with the totals tapering off to the north and getting wetter to the south. Canoa Ranch received just over 8/10 of an inch. Elephant Head tallied 1.54, and Tubac had 1.02. The Santa Cruz River at Quail Crossing Boulevard recorded nearly half of an inch. We definitely did see some of the heavier rainfall down south, kind of near Amato, Elephant Head, and then going outward towards Aravaca Junction with I-10, Rasmussen said. A spokesperson for the town of Sorita said they had no reported storm damage. A Pima County Department of Transportation spokesperson said on Thursday they didn't have any reports of damage in the area in and around Green Valley. On Thursday, about 3,300 Tucson Electric Power customers lost the power. DEP did not immediately respond to several requests on whether it had been storm-related, and as of 4 o'clock p.m. on Thursday, DEP's outage map showed none of its customers were without power. Pima County sent out alerts about flooding on the West Hawk Way, South Mount Hopkins Road, and Elephant Head Road, all in the Elephant Head area. The alerts warned drivers to use caution on the roads but didn't close them. And on Thursday, National Weather Service expected less activity throughout the weekend with isolated storms to the south near the U.S.-Mexico border. Rasmussen said activity would pick up during the first half of this week as moisture makes its way north into southwestern Arizona from the Gulf of California. Rasmussen said that the area in National Weather Service was focused on Pima County through Santa Cruz County. The Weather Service received reports of flash flooding in central Pima County and parts of Santa Cruz. Rasmussen said there was also flash flooding reported in the Amato area. Rasmussen said the only downside is that the area would, as far as monsoons go, the area would warm up. It could be difficult to get bigger storms, and monsoon typically brings. He said weekends could be increased compared to what he's seen in the past. For Green Valley, we're kind of right on the cusp, right on the edge of where all that moisture is coming up from the south, Rasmussen said. So if the moisture spills over a little bit more, then the heavier precipitation will be the bigger threat. If the moisture stays just outside of it, a little bit to the west, then it'll be a more gusty wind type of threat. As for the monsoon so far, Rasmussen said the seasons start differently every year, but this year is seeing more precipitation to open it compared to their typical windstorms in the beginning, followed by late rain in July and August. So it was nice to kind of get this first shot of moisture to come in, but it's the nature of the monsoon itself that you're going to have moisture come in. It kind of ebbs and flows. Well, next week's trial of a Tucson man accused of shooting a Sorita man to death last year has been postponed until November. According to court documents, Pima County Superior Court Judge Richard Gordon delayed the trial of Douglas Gauff, that's G-A-U-F, 66 years old, over the objections of the slain man's family, stating that the delay is indispensable to the interests of justice. Gordon found that extraordinary circumstances include the need to test additional evidence for DNA. On May 17th of 2024, Sorita police were asked to check on the welfare of Nancy Stonehouse and her son, Terry Parker, who hadn't been heard from in a while, and Stonehouse, who has dementia, had missed a doctor's appointment. Inside the home, officers found Parker, 51 years old, dead inside his locked bedroom, court documents stated. They also found baggies of cocaine in his bedroom and an empty gun case. In a court document, prosecutors said the detectives obtained a search warrant for Parker's phone and determined that Goff was his cocaine dealer. Detectives pulled over Goff for traffic violations in Tucson, found him in possession of ammunition that was the same as the two spent shell casings found in Parker's bedroom. They also found two bags of cocaine in Goff's truck consistent with the cocaine that had been found in Parker's bedroom, and he admitting to selling cocaine to Parker. In addition, the prosecutor said the firearm missing from Parker's bedroom was found in Goff's laundry hamper, and it had blood spatter on it. Goff was indicted on June 3rd of 2024 on a first-degree murder charge and a first-degree burglary charge. Prosecutors later announced they intend to seek enhanced sentencing by proving Goff has a prior felony conviction and that he either laid in wait for Parker or ambushed him at his home in the 300 block of East Calle Minerva, which is in the La Jolla Verde neighborhood south of Nogales Highway and east of Abrego Drive. Goff told detectives that Parker had recently resurfaced in his life after having lost contact for several years, and they began frequenting Tucson bars together, a separate court document stated. Goff gave conflicting stories about how he came in to be possession of the ammunition and handgun magazines. Initially, he told detectives he didn't know whose cocaine was found in his vehicle, but after being confronted with text messages, he said that shortly after the texts about drug sales were sent, he transitioned from being the seller to a middleman, no longer selling the victim cocaine. The court documents also indicated that Goff had told detectives a dangerous person named Shorty was upset with Parker for unknown reasons. Detectives found a text from Goff to Parker indicating the same, but he declined to elaborate when he was questioned about it. And Goff claimed not to remember where he was in the time of the shooting, but texts between he and Parker show that he was in the Sorita Green Valley area. According to him, he's approximately 65 years of age, doesn't concern himself with remembering much of anything, the report stated. Suspect Harold Goff frequently answered most questions with, "I don't know," or "I don't remember." In asking for a high bail, detectives wrote that Goff showed absolutely no remorse for his involvement in the alleged homicide of someone who he had deemed a friend, and the fact that he supplied Parker with cocaine also showed an indifference to human life. Goff is being held in the Pima County Adult Detention Center on $500,000 bond. Sorita Police Lieutenant John Carlson said detectives continue to comb through surveillance videos in the hopes of finding out who left three explosive devices in northern Sorita on June 13th and 20th. They're also awaiting the results of a forensic analysis that was performed on one of the devices by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. Three cylinder-shaped devices were found by local residents and later neutralized by Pima County Regional Bomb Squad. A Maricopa County Superior Court judge has ruled against Cow Palace owner Frank Bertolino, saying his attorneys failed to prove the state of Arizona caused the flooding of his restaurant in September of 2018. Bertolino filed a lawsuit against the state after his nearly 100-year-old restaurant was inundated with 3 to 4 feet of water and mud during a freak Labor Day weekend storm. His attorneys argued that the Arizona Department of Transportation allowed vegetation and sediment to build up under a bridge in Sapori Wash, forcing huge amounts of water out of the wash and into the back doors of the Amato business. They further argued the state had an obligation to consider the flood risks of the bridge during inspections, even if flood control was not the purpose of the bridge. The state's attorney said that Cow Palace flood damage was caused by the storm's sheer magnitude, not sediment or debris or vegetation under the West Frontage Road Bridge. The wash can hold 10,000 cubic feet per second of flow, and during the storm, 23,000 cubic feet of water flowed upstream toward the bridge, they said. After a five-day trial in February, Maricopa County Superior Court Judge Christopher Witten asked the attorneys for both sides to present their closing arguments in a written form. Witten has been pondering his decision since May 22nd when Bertolino's attorneys, Michael Poli and Lawrence Moon, filed a rebuttal to the closing arguments submitted by the Arizona Department of Transportation and their attorneys, Douglas Northrup, Andrea Marconi, and Taylor Burgoon. Nate Bertolino did not respond to text Thursday seeking comment. In the 11-page decision released on Thursday, Witten wrote, "No evidence supports the conclusion that reasonable maintenance of the bridge required removal of sediment around the bridge." The expert testimony on bridge maintenance did not support the plaintiff's claim of breach, Witten also wrote. The judge said that despite the plaintiff's argument that the state was supposed to give greater priority to the recommendations that were made for the removal of debris and vegetation, there was no evidence to support that either, and again noted that the state was immune anyway. Four lawsuits were filed against the state following the flood. Three plaintiffs settled their suits long ago. Lynn Greens, who was leasing the restaurant from Bertolino, settled for $100,000, and Joe and Karen Henson received $48,000 for damage to their home, the barn and their alfalfa fields, pens, and sheds on West Frontage Road. John Benck, owner of the Amato Feed Store and RV storage lot, settled his case for $210,000. And under the terms of all three agreements, both sides paid their own attorneys' costs and the ADOT admitted no liability. The cow pallets with signs of mold and heavily damaged by vandalism was demolished in January. It's 9:42 here at Sun Sounds of Arizona. Good morning. The driver of a vehicle that drove through the front door of Northwest Specialty Care on Thursday was taken to a hospital in stable condition, according to a spokesman for the Santa Rita Fire District. The vehicle crashed into the building off of Duval Mine Road, east of Safeway, at about 2:15 p.m. No employees or patients were hurt. The building was evacuated, and the firefighters began evaluating its structural integrity. The scene was soon turned over to the town of Sorita and the Sorita Police Department for continued investigation and a building safety assessment. Well, it may have been just shy of 100 degrees, but that didn't deter dozens of Tucson area firefighters from donning hats, helmets, and 45 pounds of self-contained breathing apparatus to practice their firefighting skills at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base on Wednesday. Among those in attendance were members of the Santa Rita Fire District's recruit class of 2502, who will spend three of their eight-week course at training at the base. And for the last 20 years or so, DMFD and SRFD crews have regularly trained together on the base. Officials from both agencies said there are big advantages. DM, which is part of the 355th Civil Engineering Squadron, has training apparatus, and Santa Rita Fire Department does not, and the agencies teach each other different skill sets. In addition, training helps them work seamlessly together when they work incidents. DM has what's called a 60-foot-tall burn building that allows firefighters to practice skills in up to 700 degrees of heat in dark and smoky conditions, and they can also learn how to propel using the facility. Santa Rita Fire Department Chief Greg Van Alstine said without the burn building, the district's firefighters would only be able to practice on one-story facilities. That wouldn't be optimum should a fire break out at La Posada's multi-story La Perla building. In recent weeks, Santa Rita fire crews have also helped DM fighters obtain two National Wildlife Coordination Group certifications, teaching them how to fight brush fires. And let's see here. Krista and Cody McCord are coming up on their first wedding anniversary. Vanessa and Manuel are nearing their third, and Nicole and Simon Hammond are going 17 strong years strong after saying I do. And besides living or working in Sorita, the three couples have at least one other thing in common. They met through dating apps. According to a July 2022 Pew Research Center study, 1 in 10 partnered adults met through a dating app like Tinder, Match, or Bumble. And that number is likely to rise. According to the same study of 6,000 people, 30% of adults have used a dating app, and 44% of them are looking for a long-time partner. Although 53% of those used are using dating apps are ages 18 and 29, roughly 33% are 50 and older, according to the study. All three local couples would recommend dating apps, but all agreed that people shouldn't set their expectations too high. One Suarita woman had given up on dating completely for now and is in the process of filing an injunction against harassment after one 20-minute horrifying date. According to the same Pew study, 56% of women under the age of 50 said that they had been sent a sexually explicit message that they didn't ask for. 43% said they had someone continue to contact them after they had told them that they weren't interested. Krista McCord, a Suarita middle school teacher, decided to give dating apps a try about 6 years ago. She created profiles on Match, eHarmony, Christian Mingle, and Bumble. Up to that point, I hadn't had very much luck meeting people, whether it was at church or whether it was in groups or events I went to with friends or colleagues, she said. I thought, hey, why not? Why not give it a shot? Before meeting her husband on Bumble 3 years ago, she found herself having a lot of dead-end conversation via text and telephone, and over the course of 3 years, she went on 20 to 30 dates, and only a few were with the same man, she said. She considers herself lucky. Those she met had been honest about themselves when creating their dating profiles. I really didn't have an issue with finding stuff in common with them. I've always been a huge talker, so it wasn't an issue with finding stuff in common, per se. It was more so just chemistry, McCord said. When she saw her future husband's profile, she thought he seemed like a genuine person. And when she met him, she liked how sweet he was. He picked her up from work and took her out for ice cream at the Dairy Queen. It wasn't quite magical at first. When he came to pick me up, he reached out his arms for a hug and I just completely blocked him, and I just went for a handshake instead, said Krista, who is 27 years old. It was the most awkward interaction ever. After ice cream, they hoped to go for a walk along Suarita Lake, but it was closed. Animax Park was closed too, so they ended up in her mom's backyard. We sat under my mom's gazebo under the stars, and we completely lost track of time, Krista said. We were talking about this, that, and the other, and I felt like I had known him for years. Cody McCord wasn't a big fan of dating apps before he met Krista. I would go on dates here and there. Some of them were awkward. It was hard to form a conversation with somebody. There were some interactions online when it seemed like you could talk really well and then you'd be in person and it just wasn't quite the same. He didn't quite have the same feeling you once met in person, but I think dating apps allow you to meet a bunch of people you wouldn't normally meet in just your day-to-day regular life. Like his future wife, he tried a handful of apps, and over the course of 4 or 5 years, he only went on 5 to 8 dates, either because he didn't feel a connection or because the dates fell through. Cody, who is a 27-year-old mechanic for Southwest Gas, calls himself exceptionally lucky that he met Krista and has advice for others. Probably what I would say is don't get your hopes up, he said. Don't go into it expecting to find somebody that you're going to marry. Those stories are out there for sure, but I also know a lot of people who have dating apps who just use them to have one-night stands, he said. His wife Krista is more optimistic. Avoid scams. According to Rape, Abuse, and Incest National Network, here are the red flags to watch for to avoid being scammed. Ask for financial assistance in any way, often because of a sudden... If they ask for official financial assistance, often because of a sudden personal crisis, or if they claim to be from the United States but is currently living or working or traveling abroad, or if they claim to be recently widowed with children, or if they disappear suddenly from the site and then reappear under a different name. Also watch out if they give vague answers to specific questions. And if they're overly complimentary and romantic too early in your communication is a red flag. or if they pressure you to provide your phone number or talk outside of the dating app or the dating site, if they request your home or work address under the guise of sending flowers or gifts, or if they tell consistent or grandiose stories, and if they use disjointed language and grammar but claim to have a high level of education, is a dead giveaway. You don't really ever feel 100% ready per se, but it's just a matter of having faith in God and having faith in yourself that you will decide to take the plunge, she said. Vanessa, a Suarita resident who asked that her last name not be used, starting using dating apps like Tinder and Bumble in October of 2022 after a breakup. I knew a few people, but there weren't any people that I was interested in, and so I wanted to kind of expand that little window, the 22-year-old said. She generated a lot of interest over the various apps, but only one or two people caught her attention. The others just weren't interested in the same thing, she said. They just wanted to have fun in the moment and move very fast like friends with benefits, and that was all there was to it. And that wasn't something I wanted. I wanted long-term, she said. One guy she went out with wanted a long-term relationship but found out they had different religious beliefs after just one date. But she didn't give up. I went on maybe two dates before I met the one, Vanessa said. She met Manuel in late October 22. They married 2 months later, and they had chemistry from the beginning, but it went deeper than that, she said. We saw kindness in each other, and I would just say that we knew. We felt like each other was at home, Vanessa said. Still, the decision to get married was sudden. We were just talking about it one night in the living room, and we were joking about it. Like, imagine we got married, and he said, no, let's do it, like for real, let's go tomorrow. And she said, yeah, whatever, sure. And the next morning, I actually woke up and said, okay, let's go get married right now. They married at a Tucson courthouse that morning. Didn't tell anybody until after the vows. Oh my gosh, there was so much drama, she said. Everybody was definitely shocked. There were a few tears, but eventually we threw a big wedding party, and now we're good. Everybody's calmed down. She and Manuel, 27, an engineer, welcomed a son 5 months ago. 9:53 and change. Suarita resident Nicole Hammond, 47, who owns a marketing agency, was living in South Dakota running her business when she had an epiphany. When I was 28, I was like, you know, if I'm going to have kids, I should maybe find a husband, she said. She tried eHarmony and Match, but gave up after a few months. I think the biggest thing was that it felt more like a game with them than trying to actually make connections. You could tell they were direct messaging 30 different people, and they had no clue what they had talked about you about necessarily. It was just a numbers game to them versus actually trying to make some real connections. One of the 20 to 30 people she texted or spoke to on the phone, she only met four in person, and at one point she drove to Colorado with friends for a date, but after he came to South Dakota for their second date, they realized it wasn't worth it. It was a good way to meet other people. I grew up in that area, and I knew a lot of people, but I knew that I wanted to date somebody who wasn't a broke rodeo cowboy, Hammond said. It's a great lifestyle, but there is no financial security. Eventually, Hammond got back on Match and met Simon. Like her, he was raised in the country. He grew up in agriculture, and that was the biggest thing, Hammond said. She admits she also liked his profile picture. When we just started talking, he seemed really genuine on the phone, and we went to the phone pretty fast versus texting, she said. They dated long distance for about 19 months because Simon, who is a software engineer, got a job in Iowa 6 weeks after they met. They were engaged in August of 2007 and married in the May of 2008. Their son, Lincoln, is 13. She didn't have any bad experiences using the apps, but Hammond knows there are risks and offers advice. And several months after her divorce, Beth, who's 36, felt like she was ready for the dating scene. Following the advice of a friend, she decided to sign up for a dating app last spring. Beth, not her real name, asked to be given anonymity out of fear for herself and her family, but she chose Bumble because it describes itself as a social network rooted in promoting kindness, respect, and empowerment. And she said she liked the idea that women have to make the first move. After texting and talking on the phone with 20 to 25 men, she arranged to meet about 8 of them in person. The others just wanted to take her to bed, she said. I told them, I'm not here for that. I want somebody to do life with, she said. There were guys who would give me compliments and say, hey, beautiful, you're so gorgeous, but I'm more than just my looks. I'm smart and I'm funny. And I'm intelligent and I can hold a conversation. One man she met in person was at least 5 years older than a photo. Didn't match picture at all, she said. She didn't hit it off with either. Another didn't match his picture. Another man she met in Tucson spent her entire time ranting about other drivers, law enforcement officers, and life in general. He also refused to remove his sunglasses. You couldn't have a conversation. You just wanted to sit there, and we'd been talking so well on the phone. It was just very weird. There was one man, however, who gave her hope. He said the right things. He talked about being emotionally intelligent, emotionally unaware, or emotionally aware. We had really good conversations, and he wasn't pushing to be intimate right off the bat, Beth said. I was like, well, he's respectful. That's good. But 3 weeks into the relationship, she realized he wasn't as good a catch as she thought and moved on. Undeterred, she continued, and she met another man that advertised himself as being emotionally intelligent. They video chatted, and within a matter of a week or so agreed to meet in Phoenix. After making sure her sister and boyfriend could track her phone, Beth met the man at the hotel he was staying at with every intention of going out for dinner. She clearly told him sex was not on the table. Within minutes, the man had lit up a marijuana joint, told all of his tattoos, memorialized friends lost to gangs or drug use, and that he had a criminal record. He also listed all the mental illnesses he had been diagnosed with, and he mentioned his trip earlier that day to Fascinations, an adult entertainment store where he bought her some gifts. I tracked that cool, and I pulled my phone up and said, oh, there's a text from my sister. My kids need me. Tell a friend where you're going when you do these things. Take a screenshot of your date's profile and send it to a friend. Meet them in a public place. For your first date, avoid meeting someone you don't know well in your home. Don't rely on your date for transportation. It's important that you are in control of your own transportation to and from the date so that you can leave whenever you want to, not have to rely on your date. Stick to what you're most comfortable with. There's nothing wrong with having a few drinks on a date, but try to keep your limits in mind. Don't feel pressured to drink just because your date is drinking. Try a video chat before you meet in person. And once you've matched with a potential date and chatted, consider scheduling a chat with them before meeting in person for the first time. Enlist the help of a bartender or waiter if you feel uncomfortable in a situation. It can help to find an advocate nearby. You can enlist the help of a waiter or a bartender to help you create a distraction or call the police and get a safe ride home. And trust your instincts. If you feel uncomfortable, trust your instincts and feel free to leave a date or cut off communication with whoever is making you feel unsafe. And don't worry about being rude. Your safety is most important. And your date, they should understand that. And that, my friends, will take care of the reading of the Green Valley News for the 7th day of July. My name is Mark DeGroff. I thank you for joining me today. And I wish you a very, very good day. It's going to be hot, so take water with you if you're outside. Sorry to Green Valley. I thank you so much from Sun Sounds of Arizona in Tucson. Stay tuned for more programming. Thanks for listening.